Chapter 13. Bottled Lightning. Gardas opened his eyes. Ghosts surrounded him, wispy fingers clutching at his warplate. Indistinct faces pressed close as a wave of whispers washed over him.
Garadan, help us. Garadan, it hurts.
He swept his rune blade out as gently as he could and dispersed them. As ever, the voices were the last thing to fade. Oily rain fell across a leprous glen. Nurgle's garden was much as he remembered, down to the sickly stink of the air as it scoured his lungs. He tensed, and for a moment he was lost once more, fleeing for his life across the endless mire, sustained only by faith and desperation. He forced himself to relax. Now was not then, and Bolothrax was dead, or as good as. Slain by a goddess. Gardas wished he had been there to see it.
It's like breathing soup, Aetius muttered.
The Liberator Prime stood nearby, scraping at the brownish-gray mold growing patchily on his armor. It was the rain that brought it, rain created by the clouds which were fed by the smoke from Nurgle's cauldrons. Or so their unwilling guide swore. He glanced at the Rotbringer crouched in the mud.
It gets worse, Gardas said.
His own armor, while grimy, was free of mold. The rain sizzled when it struck him, purified by the nimbus of light seeping from his pores. Where he strode, the water bubbled and the flabby vegetation withered and blackened. He wondered if Sigmar had foreseen this moment during his reforging and welded the light to his renewed soul for this very purpose. If so, to what end? Was he merely another weapon to be employed on corrupted battlefields? Or was there some deeper meaning? He shook his head, annoyed with himself.
Only the faithful, he murmured.
Whatever Sigmar's purpose, Gardas would see it through. He had faith in the God King's design. He pushed his doubts aside and moved among his warriors, speaking quiet words of comfort and encouragement to those who needed it. And there were more of those than he liked. The pox rain did not simply stain armor, it tarnished mind and soul as well. He was not the only one seeing ghosts or hearing the voices of those they'd failed. One Judicator leaned slumped against a tree, breathing heavily. Gardas could smell the acidic stink of vomit on the warrior's breath. He set a hand on the Stormcast's shoulder.
Breathe easy, brother, and shallow. It helped somewhat.
I did not think it would be this way, the Judicator said.
He fumbled at the clasps of his helmet.
I can't breathe. There are flies in my armor. I can hear them, feel them.
His voice cracked.
Kadok,
Gardas barked as he caught the warrior's hands.
I require your beacon, Knight Azeroth.
Kadok dropped like a stone from the sky. He unhooked his beacon from his belt and opened it wide. The radiance within washed over the struggling Judicator. He stiffened and then gradually relaxed. Gardas turned.
Solus, Aetius, check your men. This place affects some more strongly than others, even with the protection of Morbus's prayers. I would not lose anyone else.
He left the afflicted Judicator in the care of his prime and splashed towards Morbus.
Any sign of them?
Overhead, Tegras led his prosecutors in an ever-widening circle. The winged Stormcast flew lower than normal, hampered by the thick air and the poisonous clouds above. Morbus shook his head.
No, but they are close. I can feel something, like heat from newly stirred ashes.
He turned.
And something else as well. Hotter. Brighter.
He was interrupted by a long, ululating shriek. Stormcasts whirled, groping for weapons or knocking arrows. Overhead, Enyo called out something. The Knight Venator dived into the tree line, moving so swiftly that she was no more than a blur of silver. As Gardas hurried towards where she'd vanished, he heard the hiss crack of her bow.
Taunus!
He roared, extending his hammer. Taunus shot past him, drawing an arrow from his quiver as he did so, his star eagle at his side. Gardas burst through a clump of trees and slid to a halt in the slippery mud. The clearing was alive with savage movement. A serpentine length of scaly flesh thrashed, seeking to coil about a spotted shape, which screeched and snapped in a frenzy. The two Night Venators peppered the scaly coils with arrows, but the crackling missiles seemed to have little effect on the monster, whatever it was.
"Parkswarm," Gatrog said from behind Gardas.
The Rotbringer stood within a phalanx of liberators, and Aishas held his chains.
"Ugly brutes, always hungry, and venomous."
He looked around.
"Give me a blade, and I'll soon have its head off, if you like."
"Keep him back," Gardas said.
He splashed towards the battle, drawing his rune blade as he did so. A wedge-shaped head, marked by tattered fins and bloody wounds, shot forwards to meet him, jaws wide. A blow from his hammer shattered the blackened fangs as they tried to close about him. His blade carved apart the wormy tongue, filling the air with poisonous ichors. He ignored its shriek of agony and lunged, carving through the muscles of its mouth. Unnatural flesh split and tore as he bulled forwards, chopping away at its maw and throat. Finally, it swayed back from him, shattering trees in its death throes. As the coils settled into the water, the poxworm's opponent was revealed.
"Talon," Gardas said, dropping to one knee. "That is you, isn't it?"
The Griffhound stood shakily, his spotted form scored by bloody wounds. He favored one paw, and chunks of fur and feathers were missing from his hide. Flanks heaving, the creature stared at Gardas suspiciously, as if unable to believe the evidence of his senses. The Lord Celestant set aside his hammer and extended a hand, murmuring soothingly. A wounded Griffhound was a dangerous thing, as the poxworm had discovered. They had even been known to turn on their handlers on occasion. Talon leaned forwards, beak scraping down his palm. After a moment, the animal stumbled against him, chirping softly. Gardas stroked the beast's neck.
"Easy," he murmured. "Easy. You're among friends."
The Griffhound pushed away from him and growled. Gardas rose as the animal limped away, casting backward glances every few steps. He splashed after the beast. Morbus was waiting on them nearby. The Lord Relictor crouched beside something shrouded in moss and mud.
"Talon was protecting them," Morbus said,
scraping a chunk of mud away to reveal a swathe of silver. Gardas's mouth was dry.
"How many?" "5. All dead."
Morbus stood.
"Loras is not among them."
Gardas felt a flash of relief. "Then he might still live." He hesitated.
"But if they're dead, why are they here?"
"Their souls are trapped in their flesh, caught fast by the baleful magics of this place, like lightning in a bottle."
"Is there anything to be done?" Gardas said, looking down at the corpse.
"One thing."
Morbus extended his staff, and Gardas took it. The Lord Relictor raised his hands over the body and began to murmur a prayer. The body started to shimmer and twitch. A thin web of lightning crackled between Morbus's fingers. He uttered a single hammer-stroke word and slammed his hands down. The body bucked, and Morbus wrenched his hands up, drawing out the energies trapped in the body. He lurched to his feet, forcing Gardas to step back. Lightning crawled over Morbus's arms and chest as the body was reduced to swirling ash. He clenched his fists and bent double. The lightning faded until only a faint glow remained.
"Now, the others,"
Morbus hissed. He shoved past Gardas and stumbled towards the other bodies, where they lay shrouded in filth. Morbus repeated the ceremony, drawing the lightning of the fallen stormcasts, their very essences, into himself. His eyes sparked as he reclaimed his staff.
"I have their souls. They are safe in my keeping."
"And what of you?" Gardas said. "I have never seen this rite, never even heard a whisper of it. What is it?"
It has no name, and you have not seen it, because it has not yet been necessary, Morbus said.
He leaned against his staff.
The rites of the Temple of Ages are manifold. This is but one.
He fixed Gardas with a burning gaze.
Would you see the others? Shall I draw down the full fury of the celestial storm here and burn this garden to its roots? It would mean our deaths, but better a quick death than what I fear is to come.
No, Gardas said, shaken.
Morbus was among the most powerful of the storm summoners. Some said that he was second in wisdom only to Iona's Cryptborn, though Morbus kept his opinions in that regard to himself.
No, we go forward. Whatever the cost.
Again, Gardas paused.
We must do this, Morbus.
Morbus nodded.
So we must. Lead on, Lord Celestant.
He gestured briskly, and Gardas almost smiled. He turned to where their unwilling guide knelt in the mire under the watchful eyes of Taunus. He waved his hand, and the Knight Venator roughly dragged the Rotbringer to his feet.
Which direction? Gardas said.
There are no directions, Gatrog said with a laugh. Not here.
He gagged as Gardas caught him by the throat.
But we should definitely go that way,
he gurgled, jerking his head to indicate a path. Gardas released him.
Why?
Because that's where the current goes, and where the galleys will be.
Gatrog hawked and spat.
This is but the first tier of the garden, the antechamber, if you will, the place where souls drift into the garden and become lost. The servants of the King of All Flies haunt these waters and capture any they come across.
And take them where?
Despair, despondency, desolation.
He talks nonsense, Cadoc said, reaching for his starblade.
No, they are being places, Taunus said.
He clutched his head, as if trying to pry the information free.
At least, I am thinking they are.
The Knight Venator sounded shaken, worried. Gardas wondered if it had been a mistake to bring him, not because he doubted Taunus's loyalty, but because of the obvious strain the situation was placing on him.
Then that is where we must go, Morbus said. I can sense the Lord Castellan's soul fire, but it is growing faint.
He shook his head.
We may not be able to catch up in time. Loras might well be lost to us, Gardas.
Before Gardas could reply, a whistle from above caught his attention. Tegras swooped low and gestured.
Something approaches, Steel Soul! A vessel of some sort!
Gardas glanced at Morbus.
Sigmar provides,
the Lord Relictor said with a shrug, as they followed Tegras to the edge of the dripping glade. Through a curtain of fungal trees, Gardas spotted a wedge-shaped prow nosing through the miasma, and heard the thump of drums. Great oars struck the water and dragged the bottom of the galley across the more solid areas. He heard croaking voices raised in an abominable song, and the rattle of rusty weapons. The flies, swarming about them, seemed to grow more agitated, and Gardas swept out his hand in a futile attempt to disperse them. He signalled, and Taunus dragged Gatrog forward. Gardas stared down at the Pox Knight.
What is it?
As I said, a galley. Soul slavers. They gather up the lost spirits who wander aimlessly in these swamps and sell them into useful servitude, deeper in the garden.
Gatrog spat.
Sometimes honest travellers as well, it must be said.
He frowned.
I was almost taken by such an opportunistic crew of malcontents as I sought to win my spurs.
He shook his head, as if in disappointment.
Base creatures they were, low-born and lacking in honor.
Will they disembark?
Gardas asked, cutting the Rotbringer's reminiscences short.
Aye, if they see a soul in need of capture. Like as not, they already know you're here.
Gatrog laughed.
The flies that swarm so thickly on the air sometimes carry word to favored captains and lead them to their prey.
Tactics, Gardas said tersely.
None. They are rabble.
Gatrog sneered dismissively.
Demons too lowly to join one of the blighted legions, or half-things unfit for any other task.
He strained slightly.
But give me a blade and I would defeat them myself.
Gardas shoved him back towards a retinue of liberators. Hold him safe.
I need no protection,
Gatrog spluttered.
I did not mean for your sake.
A plan was already forming in his mind. A crude one, to be sure, but subtlety required time they didn't have. They needed a vessel, and here was one, ready to be taken. But they would have to do it swiftly and without damaging the galley. He gave his orders briskly.
Solus, pin down those brave enough to disembark. Tegris, keep any stragglers from retreating. Enyo, Tornus, see to any left on board. The rest of you, move in on my signal. I want that galley in one piece.
And what will you be doing?
Morbus said.
I should have thought that would be obvious. I'll be getting their attention.
Without waiting for the Lord Relictor's reply, Gardas swept aside a fungal tree with a single blow from his hammer and strode into the open. The galley had come to a halt not far away, beaching itself on a soggy hummock. In shape, it reminded Gardas of similar vessels he'd seen in his mortal years. They'd crowded the docks of Demenos Harbor, crewed by people from the southern coasts. Merchants and travelers offering up exotic spices and silks from across the great sea. But no vessel such as this had ever blighted those waters. It was a shaggy thing, its stern scabbed with hairy pustules and raw blisters. Its splintery hull was daubed in pitch and studded with rusty iron sigils, which gleamed in a sickly fashion. The mast was a looming gallows, and the sails were flabby and unnatural. A ramp made from wood and iron thudded down from the upper deck into the muck, scattering a swarm of flies and sending something large slithering away into the mists. From where he stood, Gardas could just make out the crew as they swarmed across the deck, shouting to one another in deep, inhuman voices. A lean shape appeared at the bow, its single bulbous eye narrowed in curiosity. The cyclopean demon wore a cuirass of beaten, moldy leather and a cloak of what looked to be filthy silk. The plague-bearer gave a monotone cry and pointed at him with a festering blade. Gardas clashed his weapons together.
Come and get me, he called.
Plaguebearers galumphed down the boarding ramp, their droning cries filling the air. There were men, or things that were almost men among them, their bodies covered in cancerous encrustations and weeping barnacles. These half-demons splashed ahead of their more sedate companions, closing in on Gardas with excited yelps. The Lord Celestant stepped back into the trees. The creatures raced after him. He killed the first with a single slash of his rune blade. The second fell with a crushed skull. The others slowed, suddenly uncertain.
Aishas,
Gardas said. Liberators pressed forwards from between the dripping trees. As the mortals fell, Solus gave the order, and skybolt bows hummed as the Judicators loosed a fiery rain on the approaching demons. Gardas led Pharos and his retributors towards the creatures. The fight that followed was swift. These demons were clearly not used to their prey fighting back. Lightning hammers crashed down, rupturing ragged bodies and reducing them to sludge. Gardas cut himself a path through the throng and was soon pounding up the boarding ramp. Decaying demons lay everywhere, their bodies marked by glowing arrows. The vessel stank of rot and standing water. Everything dripped with slime or floured with barnacles. The captain bounded down a set of sagging steps towards him, cloak flaring about its narrow shoulders. Gardas casually beat aside the demon's blade and ran it through. It stumbled against him, body blackening to ash. He ripped his sword free, and it dispersed on the breeze. Down below, the last of the crew was disposed of by a blow from Ferros's hammer.
"A less than satisfactory fight,"
Kadok said, as he landed at the stern with a thump.
"Greedy, Fair Enyo, very greedy,"
he called up to the circling Knight Venator.
"Be silent, Kadok,"
Morbus said, as he climbed the ramp, Ferul thumping the wood with every step. He nodded to Gardas.
"You are right. Our journey will be easier with a ship, even a ship in this condition."
Liberators and Judicators followed him, dispersing throughout the vessel to check for hidden foes.
"Yes."
Gardas strode down the line of rowers' benches. The creatures chained there were strange indeed. Some of them might once have been human, but now they were malformed by disease and harsh treatment. Clusters of fungi and barnacles crusted their flesh, obscuring faces and reducing limbs to formless lumps. He could smell the blight within them and knew it was too late. Even so, he was bound to try to help, if he could. He shattered a loop of chain with a single blow from his sword.
"You are free," he said.
The spirits stared at him in incomprehension. He broke another chain, freeing a second row. At his command, liberators followed suit, smashing the chain loops.
"Free,"
Gardas said again.
"Do you not understand?"
"They do not,"
Morbus said.
"Nor, it seems, do you."
"What do you mean?"
"Do you think that they were drawn here unwillingly? Some of them, perhaps, but not all. These souls have succumbed to Nurgle's blandishments as surely as that creature we hold in chains. They know only despair, and no light we possess can draw them out of that dark."
"You cannot know that," Gardas said.
"Look at them. Your light, Gardas. See how it pains them."
Gardas looked around. The rowers cowered back from him, hiding their eyes, their faces, as if they could not bear to look upon him. Morbus was right. He could not save them. Not this way. But neither did he have to let them remain in captivity.
"Shatter all of the chains," he said harshly. "Free any trapped in the hold."
When the last of the chains had clattered to the deck, the souls rose. Not in unison, but in arrhythmic fits and starts. More emerged from the hold, their moans rising and falling like a winter wind. The stormcast stood aside and let them pass. They flooded down the ramp and spilled into the marsh, scattering into the murk.
"We cannot just let them go,"
a liberator said, her voice startling in the silence that followed.
"It is not right."
"Nothing about this place is right,"
Gardas said. He looked around.
"The vessel is ours. The question now is how to get it moving."
"I dislike the thought of spending time on such a ship,"
Aisha said. The Liberator Prime's disgust was palpable.
"You prefer walking,"
Solas said from where he sat on the rail.
"Walking is the only honorable means of travel."
"Slow, though,"
Solas said.
"And Tegras might disagree. What say you, sainted I?"
Tegras, perched on the mast above, laughed.
"I could carry him in a sling, like a babe in arms, and in armor."
"Quiet,"
Morbus said sternly.
"Kadok."
The knight Azeroth looked towards the Lord Relictor.
"Command me, Storm Warden."
Morbus gestured with his hammer.
"Hang your beacon from the mast, Prince of Ekran."
Kadok stabbed his blade into the mast and hung his beacon from the hilt. Cerulean light spilled out, washing over every board and nail. It raced across the rails and climbed towards the flabby sails. Morbus strode amidships and thrust his staff down. Lines of cobalt fire converged on him and rose up in an eye-searing conflagration as he spoke a single word. The flame swelled, colors darkening, as the Lord Relictor reached out and plucked something from within them. Morbus turned, offering up what appeared to be a spike made from sapphire light.
Kadok, you may retrieve your beacon. Gardas, place this at the center line and strike true.
Gingerly, Gardas took the spike. It was the size of a gladius, but had no weight to it. He did as Morbus had requested, pacing to the midpoint of the ship. He sank down and set the spike into the deck. The boards creaked and began to blacken. Gardas stood and lifted his hammer in both hands. When he struck, a thunderclap echoed. Strange birds took flight from the closest of the crooked trees, and the miasma thinned as a blaze of azure enveloped the galley, stem to stern. The old sails burnt away, traded for new ones of flame. The rigging was consumed and replaced by strands of lightning. Every board, every oar, every stack was limned by a blue nimbus. Smoke rose from the waterline as the sludge was burnt momentarily pure by the touch of the vessel's hull. The stormcasts looked around in wonder.
"It will not last long in this place," Morbus said, his voice a ragged growl. "But it will last long enough."
Gardas nodded and looked around.
"You heard him," he said loudly. "Every warrior to an oar. Time runs thin, and we have leagues yet to travel."
Clear of the trees and miasma of the swamp, Gutrot Spume could see the great cloud of pock smoke that rose up in the distance, spilling from the hollows of the garden's heart. The smoke billowed up from Grandfather's cauldron, inundating each level with his blessed contagions. Spume inhaled deeply, drawing the wonderful stink into himself.
"Ah!"
he exhaled.
"It smells like victory, eh, Dirk?" "As you say, Captain,"
the plague-bearer said. It prodded the ruined hole that might once have been a nose.
"Can't tell myself."
Spume chuckled and slapped the demon on the shoulder.
"A shame."
Derg's single bleary eye narrowed.
"Land ho,"
he said, pointing a knobbly finger. Spume nodded. He'd spotted the gateway. There were only 7 true paths out of the swamp and into the deeper garden, and this was the largest of them. At a distance, it resembled a half-submerged range of mountains or leprous fingers reaching for the yellow sky. Spume lifted his axe and set it across his shoulder. He mused on his good fortune. The silver skin chained in his hold was a prize Nurgle, indeed all of the ruinous powers had long desired. Sigmar's return had upset a balance long in the making. Chaos had held sway in the mortal realms for uncontested centuries, and things had, to Spume's way of thinking, fallen into a pleasing rhythm. Like the tides of the sea, chaos had begun to wear away at the foundations of existence, and Spume had sailed those tides to power and glory. Not alone, either. Others had accompanied him in his voyages. Urslaug was one such. She was not a friend, as such. The sorceress had once served aboard his ship, wielding the poxwinds in his favor. But she had grown tired of the sea dog's life and retired to her studies in the comfort of the garden. It had been a century or more since he'd had need of her services, and that time hadn't ended well. From the sound of things, she hadn't forgiven him yet.
"Women, eh?"
he gurgled, glancing at Derg.
"Rot fly,"
Derg said. Spume blinked, momentarily confused by the plague-bearer's reply. Then he heard the telltale hum of wings. He looked up, shading his eyes with the tentacle.
"What's this, then?"
The fly was larger than a man and fat with strength. It bobbed through the damp air, riding the currents with an awkward inexorability. Its hairy legs were decorated with tarnished gewgaws of gold and silver, and a saddle made from woven scalps was cinched across its abdomen. The plague-bearer that sat astride it was similarly bedecked in a fine yellowish coat of mouldering cloth and fraying ruffles of silk. A bent rapier was sheathed on its bony hip, and its horn was polished to a pulchritudinous gleam. The rotfly struck the deck with a thump, scattering crew.
"Ahoy!"
the rider croaked.
"Step forward, Lord of Tentacles. I come bearing word from your betters, sir." And who would that be?
Spume said, glaring up at the rider.
Come to it. Who are ye?
He knew this creature's sort. One of the courtiers who clung like errant motes to the disease-infested corridors of Nurgle's manse. They did not speak for the Lord of all things. Rather, they spoke for his closest servants and waged silent wars in their name. The Court of Ruination was infested with them.
I am Persilimus Blotch.
The plague-bearer snuffled noisily at a reeking handkerchief he extracted from one sleeve.
Forgive me, I am not used to such uncultured foulness.
Blotch's eye narrowed.
I much prefer the artisanal bouquets of desolation. Have you ever smelled them, Reaver?
The eye gleamed with malice.
No, I expect not.
Spume frowned.
I have, as a matter of fact, and most pleasing they are, though I much prefer the tang of salt water to the soft fens of the garden. Why are you here? Who sent you? One who far outstrips you in power, I assure you.
Blotch cast about condescendingly.
Though that is not difficult. You have fallen far, Admiral. Come down in the world, haven't you? A setback,
Spume said. The haft of his axe creaked in his grip.
A permanent one, if you are not careful,
the plague-bearer said.
Things have changed in the wake of the Dlotkin's failure to hold open the doorway to Gairan. Those who fought in those verdant fields are no more the favored children. New bile is needed in these troubling times, don't you think?
No,
Spume said.
And that is your problem, Corsair,
Blotch chuckled.
You don't think.
How dare ye set foot uninvited on my ship and cast insults?
Spume gargled, lifting his axe.
I ought to split your mossy skull, fly dandy.
And attract grandfather's ire, Captain?
The plague-bearer hissed, leaning over to bare his bulbous throat.
If you would have it so, strike, sir. Strike, then!
Spume bristled. He swept the axe back, but could not bring himself to do it. The fly-dandy was right. He might be the wormy apple of grandfather's eye, but his visitor was part of the same bunch, and perhaps an even wormier one than Spume. He let the bite of his axe thump to the deck.
What do ye want?
You have something that does not belong to you, pirate.
Do I?
Spume gestured to the bent backs of the slaves.
One of these wretches, perhaps, or a keg of finest canker wine?
Blotch chortled.
You know of what I speak, Slugtrail.
Aye, mayhap I do. What concern is it of yours?
You will bring it to desolation, or suffer the consequences. Father Decay would see this thing you have found, and soon.
Spume grunted. Father Decay was the Hand of Nurgle, one of the Council of Ruination, and a name to send shudders through every soul in the garden. This Blotch had friends in low places.
And how does his loftiness know what I've found, or not found?
The fly-dandy grinned and plucked at his filthy cuffs.
How could he not, when the very air speaks of a cleansing taint?
The plague-bearer sat back in his saddle.
And more besides.
Black teeth clicked together in a crooked smile.
It is not alone, this thing.
Spume tensed.
What do you mean?
Can't you smell it, Reaver? The air burns, and not in the way it should. Look to the horizon. See the fires there, as grandfather's galleys blaze.
Spume turned, and saw that the creature spoke the truth. Something was burning out in the swamp. and he'd smelled that sort of fire before, at Profane Tor, and then later in the Canker Cascade. That they were here, now, was deeply unsettling. Not since the Age of Blood had an enemy dared breach the sanctity of the garden. He lifted his axe.
Shall I take their heads, then, these invaders?
No,
Blotch said.
They will be dealt with. Bring your plunder to desolation and be rewarded. Fail and suffer as no being has yet suffered.
Spume cocked his head.
I'll do as ye ask, but ye won't be there to see it.
His axe looped out and smashed the fly dandy from the saddle. Startled, the fly heaved itself upwards and away, buzzing loudly. The fly dandy gurgled in shock as Spume planted a boot on his throat.
No demon threatens me on my own ship.
You can't,
Blotch whimpered, clawing at Spume's leg.
Who are ye to tell me what I can and can't do on my own vessel, eh?
Spume raised his axe.
A fool, that's who. When Grandfather remakes you, Blotch, hold fast to this memory and let it guide you to future wisdom.
The axe fell, and Blotch collapsed into itself. Durg prodded the remains with a boat hook.
Father Decay won't be happy about that. No,
Spume said, flicking bits of Blotch from his axe.
He shall keep his courtiers on a shorter leash next time. I'll not play the worm belly on my own ship by Grandfather's wormy guts.
He pointed with a tentacle.
Make haste for the gate.
Durg nodded and uncoiled its whip.
Stroke,
the demon bellowed.
Stroke!
The plague-bearer snapped its whip over the heads of the rowers, causing them to ply the oars more swiftly. The sails billowed as they caught the poxwind, and soon they were cutting swiftly through the waters towards the gate. Spume planted his axe and rested his forearm atop it, watching the swamp as it receded. Blue fire flickered in the murk, and he felt the kraken in his abdomen shift in agitation. Sometimes he could feel a whisper of the thing's thoughts dripping into his own. He felt its nervousness, an animal wariness that added to his own irritation. The fly dandy had been right. He'd been a fool. He'd given no thought as to where the shiny skin had come from, only the possibilities he represented. And now it seemed more of them were on the way. He considered dropping anchor and waiting for them. If he dispatched them, Grandfather might be pleased. Unless...
Ah,
he murmured. That was it. The garden was only for the willing. If the shiny skins wanted to smash themselves a path to desolation, Grandfather would let them. Once they got deep enough in the mire, there'd be no getting out for any of them. And he was the bait drawing them in.
He's a cunning old oaf, Father Decay,
Spume said. A shadow fell across the deck, and Spume felt a shiver run along his barbed spine. He turned. They'd reached the gate, at last. He raised his axe in salute to the guardians of the gateway as the galley passed the edge of the swamp. Broken stones of immense size marked the vast, curving rim of the abyss at the swamp's heart. They rose up in haphazard ridges, between which scummy water eddied and poured down into the depths of the garden. Grandfather brewed his pox clouds, which rose up through the abyss and filled the swamp with rain. And that rain in turn ran back down, feeding into the lower tiers, through passages, rivers, and waterfalls. The gateway itself was a gargantuan arch of crudely carved basalt. It was longer than a dozen galleys chained prow to stern, and hung thick with yellowing vines. Hundreds of fruiting bodies swayed among those vines, caught fast either by the will of Nurgle or that of his chosen guardians, hope and despair. The guardians were two ossified demons hunkered on the stone plinths that rose to either side of the vast archway, gazing sightlessly and eternally out over the swamps. One was a bloated, great unclean one, its posture strained, its features twisted into an expression of savage contempt as it raised a broken blade. The other was a vulture-like monstrosity, with skeletal wings and withered limbs, leaning on a great staff, as if bracing itself against a strong wind. No servant of Nurgle, that one. Legend had it that in the eons before the mortal realms had congealed from the cosmic sump, a servant of the Changer of Ways had slipped secretly into the garden. The demon had whispered treacherous hopes into the ears of many of Grandfather's most loyal servants, including one of the oldest and mightiest of Nurgle's sons, whose name had since been erased from the Ledger of Souls. Treachery followed, as the son sought to usurp the father and paid for his temerity. Neither had the instigator of such foolishness escaped unchastised. Now both stood watch over the antechamber of the garden, until such time as Grandfather had forgiven them. The eyes of the Lord of Change seemed to follow Spume as the galley slid beneath the archway and into the curtain of vines. He heard a whisper of sound, like a voice calling out to him from some impossible distance. Spume laughed and made a rude gesture.
Peddle your promises to someone else, or I'll carve my name in your scrawny neck.
The voice faded into insulted silence as the galley moved out of the shadows of the archway. It was always the same. Some demons never learned. Spume reached up with his axe and tapped a dangling foot. The leprous body danced and twitched in its vines and emitted a sound like a groan. He laughed. No soul passed through the archway save that Nurgle willed it, and those that tried regardless lived eternally to regret it. Beyond the vines, the edges of a massive fungus-covered aqueduct rose. The passage was the only safe way down to the next tier of the garden. Spume thumped the deck with his axe.
Lay on some speed, Durg. I've got an appointment to keep.